This is Audible.
Only You Can Save Mankind by Terry Pratchett. Read by Richard Midgley.
The mighty Skreewee Empire is poised to attack Earth. Our battleships are being destroyed in a sneak raid. Nothing can stand between Earth and the terrible vengeance of the Skreewee. But there is one starship left. And out of the mists of time comes one warrior, one fighter, who is the last hope of civilization. You. You are the savior of civilization. You are all that stands between your world and certain oblivion. You are the last hope. Only you can save mankind. Action-packed with new features, just like the real thing. Full color sound and slam vector graphics.
Chapter 1. The Hero with 1,000 Extra Lives. Johnny bit his lip and concentrated. Right, coming quick. Let a missile target itself. Beep, 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 on the first fighter. Fire the missile. Thwomp! Empty the guns at the fighter. Fwomp, 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 fwomp. Hit fighter number two and take out its shield with the laser. Pfft. While the missile... takes out fighter number one. Dive. Switch guns. Rake fighter number three as it turns. Pick up fighter number two in the sights again. Up the up curve. Let go a missile. Thwomp, and rake it with... fighter number four. It always came in last. But if you went after it first, the others would have time to turn, and you'd end up in the sights of three of them. He died six times already, and it was only 5 o'clock. His hands flew over the keyboard. Stars roared past as he accelerated out of the melee. It'd leave him short of fuel, but by the time they caught up, the shields would be back, and he'd be ready, and two of them would already have taken damage. And here they come. Missiles away. Wow. Lucky hit on the first one. Die, die, die. Red fireball. Swoosh. Take shield loss while concentrating fire on the next one. Swoosh. And now the last one was running, but he could outrun it. Hit the accelerator. And just keep it in his sights while he poured shot after shot into... Ah! The huge bulk of their capital ship was in the corner of the screen. Level 10, here we come. Careful, careful. There were no more ships now, so all he had to do was keep out of its range and then sweep in and...
We wish to talk.
Johnny blinked at the message on the screen.
We wish to talk.
The ship roared by. Yoom! He reached out for the throttle key and slowed himself down, and then turned and got the big red shape in his sights again.
We wish to talk.
His finger hovered on the fire button. Then, without really looking, he moved it over to the keyboard and pressed pause. Then he read the manual.
Only you can save mankind, it said on the cover. Full sound and graphics, the ultimate game.
A Skreewee heavy cruiser, it said on page 17, could be taken out with 76 laser shots. Once you'd cleared the fighter escort and found a handy spot where the Skreewee's guns couldn't get you, it was just a matter of time.
We wish to talk.
Even with the pause on, the message still flashed on the screen. There was nothing in the manual about messages. Johnny riffled through the pages. It must be one of the new features the game was packed with. He put down the book, put his hands on the keys, and cautiously tapped out, Die, alien scum!
No! We do not wish to die! We wish to talk!
It wasn't supposed to be like this, was it? Wobbler Johnson, who'd given him the disc and photocopied the manual on his dad's copier, had said that once you'd completed level 10, you got given an extra 10,000 points and the Scroll of Valor, and moved on to the Arcturus sector, where there were different ships and more of them. Johnny wanted the Scroll of Valor. Johnny fired the laser one more time. Swoosh! He didn't really know why. It was just because you had the joystick, and there was the fire button, and that was what it was for. After all, there wasn't a don't fire button.
We surrender! Please!
He reached over and very carefully pressed the save game button. The computer whirred and clicked, and then was silent. He didn't play again the whole evening. He did his homework. It was geography. You had to colour in Great Britain and put a dot on the map of the world where you thought it was. The Scree-Wee captain thumped her desk with one of her forelegs.
What?
The first officer swallowed and tried to keep her tail held at a respectful angle.
He just vanished again, ma'am,
she said.
But did he accept?
No, ma'am.
The captain drummed the fingers of three hands on the table. She looked slightly like a newt, but mainly like an alligator.
But we didn't fire on him.
No, ma'am.
And you sent my message?
Yes, ma'am.
And every time we've killed him, he comes back.
He caught up with Wobbler in break. Wobbler was the kind of boy who's always picked last when you had to pick teams, although that was all right at the moment, as the PE teacher didn't believe in teams because they encouraged competition. He wobbled. It was glandular, he said. He wobbled especially when he ran. Bits of Wobbler headed in various directions. It was only on average that he was running in any particular direction. But he was good at games. They just weren't the ones that people thought he ought to be good at. If ever there was an inter-schools first one to break the unbreakable copy protection on galactic thrusters, Wobbler wouldn't just be in the team. He'd be picking the team.
Yo, Wobbler, said Johnny. It's not cool to say yo anymore, said Wobbler.
Is it rad to say cool? Said Johnny.
Cool's always cool, and no one says rad anymore either.
Wobbler looked around conspiratorially and then fished a package from his bag.
This is cool. Have a go at this.
What is it? Said Johnny.
I cracked Fighter Star Terror Bomber, said Wobbler. Only don't tell anyone, right? Just type FSB. It's not much good, really. The space bar drops the bombs, and, well, just press the keys. You'll see what they do.
Listen, you know only you can save mankind.
Still playing that, are you?
You didn't, you know, do anything to it, did you? Before you gave me a copy?
No, it wasn't even protected. Didn't have to do anything except copy the manual. Why?
You did play it, didn't you?
A bit.
Wobbler only played games once. Wobbler could watch a game for a couple of minutes and then pick up the joystick and get top score and then never play it again.
Nothing funny happened.
Like what? Said Wobbler.
Like,
Johnny hesitated. He could tell Wobbler and then Wobbler would laugh or not believe him or say it was just some bug or something, some kind of trick or a virus. Wobbler had disks full of computer viruses. He didn't do anything with them. He just collected them, like stamps or something. He could tell Wobbler, and then somehow it wouldn't be real.
Oh, you know,
funny.
Like what?
Weird. Lifelike, I suppose.
It's supposed to be. Just like the real thing, it says. I hope you've read the manual properly. My dad spent a whole coffee break copying that.
Johnny gave a sickly grin.
Yes. Right. Better read it then.
Thanks for Starfighter Pilot. Terror Bomber. My dad brought me back Alabama Smith and the Jewels of Fate from the States. You can have a copy if you give me the disc back.
Right, said Johnny.
It's okay.
Right, said Johnny.
He never had the heart to tell Wobbler that he didn't play half the games Wobbler passed on. You couldn't. Not if you wanted time to sleep and eat meals. But that was all right. Because Wobbler never asked. As far as Wobbler was concerned, computer games weren't there for playing. They were for breaking into, rewriting so that you got extra lives or whatever, and then copying and giving away to everyone. Basically, there were two sides to the world. There was the entire computer game software industry engaged in a tremendous effort to stamp out piracy, and there was Wobbler. Currently, Wobbler was in front.
Did you do my history? Said Wobbler.
Here, said Johnny. What it was like to be a peasant during the English Civil War. 3 pages.
Thanks, said Wobbler. That was quick.
Oh, in Jog last term we had to do one about what it's like being a peasant in Bolivia. I just got rid of the llamas and put in stuff about kings having their heads chopped off. You have to bung in that kind of stuff. And then you just have to keep complaining about the weather and the crops, and you can't go wrong in peasant essays.
Johnny lay on his bed reading Only You Can Save Mankind. He could just about remember the days when you could still get games where the instructions consisted of something that said, press L for left
and R for right, and fire for fire. But now you had to read a whole little book which was all about the game. It was really the manual, but they called it the novel. Partly it was an anti-wobbler thing. Someone in America or somewhere thought it was dead clever to make the game ask you little questions like, what's the first word on line 23 on page 19 of the manual? And then reset the machine if you didn't answer them right. So they'd obviously never heard of Wobbler's dad's office's photocopier. So there was this book. The Scree-Wee had turned up out of nowhere and bombed some planets with humans on them. Nearly all the starships had been blown up. So there was only this one left, the experimental one. It was all that stood against the Scree-Wee hordes, and only you, that is to say, John Maxwell, aged 12, in between the time you get home from school and get something to eat and do your homework, can save mankind. Nowhere did it say what you were supposed to do if the Scree-Wee hordes didn't want to fight. He switched on the computer and pressed the load game key. There was the ship again, right in the middle of his sights. He picked up the joystick thoughtfully. There was an immediate message on the screen. Well, not exactly a message, more a picture. Half a dozen little egg-shaped blobs with tails. They didn't move. What kind of message is that? He thought. Perhaps there was a special message he ought to send. Die, creep, didn't seem to fit properly at the moment. He typed, what's happening? Immediately, a reply appeared on the screen in yellow letters. We surrender. Do not shoot. See, we show you pictures of our children. He typed, is this a trick, Wobbler? It took a little while before the reply came. I'm not trick, Wobbler. We give in. No more war. Johnny thought for a while and then typed, you're not supposed to give in. Want to go home. Johnny typed, it says in the book you blew up a lot of planets. Lies! Johnny stared at the screen. What he wanted to type was, no, I mean, this can't happen. You're aliens. You can't not want to be shot at. No other game aliens have ever stopped alieninging across the screen. They never said, we don't want to go. And then he thought, they never had the chance. They couldn't. But games are a lot better now. They never made things like the old Megazoid seem real, with stories about them and full-colour graphics. This is probably that virtual reality they're always talking about on the television. He typed, it is only a game after all. What is a game? He typed, who are you? The screen flickered. Something a bit like a newt, but more like an alligator, looked back at him. I am the captain, said the yellow letters. Do not shoot. Johnny typed, I shoot at you and you shoot at me. That is the game. But we die. Johnny typed, sometimes I die. I die a lot. But you live again. Johnny stared at the words for a moment. Then he typed, don't you? No. How could this be? When we die forever. Johnny typed desperately. No, that's not right, because in the first mission, there's three ships you have to blow up before the first planet. I've played it lots of times, and there's always three ships there.
Different ships.
Johnny thought for a while, and then typed, what happens if I switch off the machine?
We do not understand the question.
This is daft, thought Johnny. It's just a very unusual game. It's a special mission or something. He typed, why should I trust you?
Look behind you.
Johnny sat bolt upright in his chair. Then he let himself swivel around very cautiously. Of course, there was no one there. Why should there be anyone there? It was a game. The newt face had disappeared from the screen, leaving the familiar picture of the inside of the starfighter. And there was the radar screen, covered in yellow dots. Yellow for the enemy. Johnny picked up the joystick and turned the starfighter around. The entire Scree-Wee fleet was there. Ship after ship was hanging in space behind him. Little fighters, big cruisers, massive battleships. If they all had him in their sights, and if they fired, he didn't want to die.
Hang on, hang on, you don't die. You just play the game again. This was nuts. It was time to stop it.
He typed, "All right, what happens now?"
"We want to go home."
He typed, "All right, no problem."
"You give us safe conduct."
He typed, "Okay, yes." The screen went blank. And that was it? No music? No congratulations? You've got the highest score? Just the little prompt flashing on and off. What did safe conduct mean, anyway?
Chapter 2. Operate controls to play game.
You never said to your parents, "Hey, I really need a computer, because that way I can play Megasteroids." No, you said, "I really need a computer because of school. It's educational." Anyway, there had to be a good side to the trying times everyone was going through in this house. If you hung around in your room and generally kept your head down, stuff like computers sort of happened. It made everyone feel better. And it was quite useful for school sometimes. Johnny had written what it felt like to be different sorts of peasants on it, and printed them out on the printer. Although he had to rewrite them in his handwriting, because although the school taught keyboard skills and new technology, you got into trouble if you used keyboard skills and new technology actually to do anything. Funnily enough, it wasn't much good for maths. He'd always had trouble with algebra, because they wouldn't let you get away with what it feels like to be X squared. But he had an arrangement with Big Mac about that, because Big Mac got the same feeling when he looked at an essay project as Johnny did when he was faced with the quadratic equation. Anyway, it didn't matter that much. If you kept your head down, they were generally so grateful that you were not, e.g., causing policemen to come to the school, or actually nailing a teacher to anything, that you got left alone. But mainly, the computer was good for games. If you turned the volume control up, you didn't have to hear the shouting. The Scree-Wee mothership was in uproar. There was still a haze of smoke in the air from the last bombardment, and indistinct figures pattered back and forth, trying to fix things up well enough to survive the journey. The captain sat back in her chair on the huge, shadowy bridge. She was yellow under the eyes, a sure sign of lack of sleep. So much to be done. Half the fighters were damaged, and the main ships were in none too good condition, and there was hardly any room, and certainly no food for all the survivors they were taking on board. She looked up. There was the gunnery officer.
"This is not a wise move," he said. "It is the only one I have," said the captain wearily. "No, we must fight on." "And then we die," said the captain. "We fight, and then we die. That's how it goes."
"Then we die gloriously."
"There's an important word in that sentence," said the captain, "and it's not the word gloriously."
The gunnery officer went light green with rage.
"He's attacked hundreds of our ships."
"And then he stopped."
"None of the others have," said the gunnery officer. "They're humans. You can't trust a human. They shoot everything."
The captain rested her snout on one hand.
"He doesn't," she said. "He listened. He talked. None of the others did. He may be the one."
The gunnery officer placed his upper two front hands on the desk and glared at her.
"Well," he said, "I've talked to the other officers. I don't believe in legends. When the full enormity of what you have done is understood, you will be relieved of your command."
She turned tired eyes towards him.
"Good," she said. "But right now, I am captain. I am responsible. Do you understand? Have you got the faintest idea of what that means? Now go!"
He didn't like it, but he couldn't disobey.
"I can have him shot," she thought. "It'd be a good idea. Bound to save trouble later on. It'll be number 235 on the list of things to do.
She turned back to continue staring at the stars outside, on the huge screen that filled one wall. The enemy ship still hung there.
What kind of person is it? She thought. Despicable though they are, there's so few of them. But they keep coming back. What's their secret? But you can be sure of one thing. They surely only send their bravest and their best.
The advantage of the trying times was that helping yourself from the fridge was okay. There didn't seem to be any proper mealtimes anymore in any case, or any real cooking. Johnny made himself spaghetti and baked beans. There was no sound from the living room, although the TV was on. Then he watched a bit of television in his room. He'd been given the old one when they got the new one. It wasn't very big, and you had to get up and walk over to it every time you wanted to change channels or the volume or whatever, but these were trying times. There was a film on the news showing some missiles streaking over some city. It was quite good. Then he went to bed. He was not entirely surprised to wake up at the controls of a starfighter. It had been like that with Captain Zoom. You couldn't get it out of your head. After an evening's concentrated playing, you were climbing ladders and dodging laser zap bolts all night. It was a pretty good dream, even so. He could feel the seat under him, and the cabin smelled of hot oil and overheated plastic and unwashed people. It looked pretty much like the one he saw on the screen every evening, except that there was a thin film of grease and dirt over everything. But there was the radar screen, and the weapons console, and the joystick. Hey, much better than the computer. The cabin was full of noises, the click and whir of fans, the hum and buzz of instruments, and better graphics. You get much better graphics in your dreams. The Scree-Wee fleet hung in the air, hung in space in front of him. Wow! Although dreams ought to be a bit more exciting. You got chased in dreams. Things happened to you. Sitting in the cockpit of a starfighter bristling with weapons was fun, but things ought to happen. He wondered if he should launch a missile or something. No, hang on, they'd surrendered. And there was that thing about safe conduct. His hands wandered over the switches in front of him. They were a bit different from the computer keyboard, but this one...
Are you receiving me?
The face of the captain appeared on the communication screen. Yes, said Johnny.
We are ready.
Ready, said Johnny. What for?
Lead the way, said the captain.
The voice came out of a grill beside the screen. It must be being translated by something, Johnny thought. I shouldn't think giant newts speak English. Where to? He said. Where are we going?
Earth.
Earth? Hang on, that's where I live. People can get into serious trouble showing huge alien fleets where they live. The grill hummed and buzzed for a while. Then the captain said,
Apology. That is a direct translation. We call the planet that is our home Earth. When I speak in Scree-Wee, your computer finds the word in your language that means the same thing. The actual word in Scree-Wee sounds like...
There was a noise like someone taking their foot out of a wet cowpat.
I will show our home to you.
A red circle suddenly developed on the navigation screen. Johnny knew about that. You just moved a green circle over it. The computer went binka 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 binka, and you'd set your course. They've shown me where they live. The thought sunk in. They trust me. As he moved his fighter forwards, the entire alien fleet pulled in behind him. They eclipsed the stars. The cabin hummed and buzzed quietly to itself. Well, at least it didn't look too hard. A green dot appeared ahead of him. He watched it get bigger and recognized the shape of a starfighter just like his. But it was a little hard to make it out. This was because it was half hidden by laser bolts. It was firing at him as it came. And it was traveling so fast it was very nearly catching up with its own fire. Johnny jerked the joystick, and his ship rolled out of the way as the enemy starfighter roared past and barreled on towards the Scree-Wee ships.
the whole sky full of Scree-Wee ships, which had surrendered to him. But people out there were still playing the game.
No! Listen to me! They're not fighting anymore!
The starfighter turned in a wide curve and headed directly for the command ship. Johnny saw it launch a missile. Someone sitting at a keyboard somewhere had launched a missile.
Listen! You've got to stop!
It's not listening to me, he thought. You don't listen to the enemy. The enemy's there to be shot at. That's why it's the enemy. That's what the enemy's for. He swung around to follow the starship, which had slowed down. It was pouring shot after shot into the command ship, which wasn't firing back. Johnny stared in horror. The ship rocked under the hail of fire. The gunnery officer crawled across the shaking floor and pulled himself up beside the captain's chair.
Fool! Fool! I told you this would happen! I demand that we return fire!
The captain was watching the Chosen One ship. It hadn't moved.
No, she said. We have to give him a chance. We must not fire on human ships. A chance? How much of a chance do we have? I shall give the order to...
The captain moved very fast. When her hand stopped, she was holding a gun very close to the gunnery officer's head. It was really only a ceremonial weapon. Normally, Scree-Wee fought only with their claws. But its shape said very clearly that things came out of the hole in the front end with the very definite purpose of travelling fast through the air and then killing people.
No,
she said. The gunnery officer's face went blue, a sure sign of terror. But he had enough courage left to say,
You would not dare fire!
It's a game, thought Johnny. There's not a real person in that ship. It's someone playing a game. It's all a game. It's just things happening on a screen somewhere.
No, I mean, yes, but at the same time, it's all happening here.
His own ship leapt forward. It was easy. It was so easy. Just line up circles on the screen, binka, 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 and then press the fire button until every weapon on the ship was empty. He'd done it many times before. The invader hadn't even seen him. It launched some missiles and then blew up in an impressive display of graphics.
That's all it is, Johnny told himself. Just things on a screen. It's not real. There's no arms and feet spinning away through the wreckage. It's all a game.
The missiles arrived. The whole cockpit went blinding white. He was aware just for a moment of cold space around him with things in it. A bookcase. A chair. A bed. He was sitting in front of the computer. The screen was blank. He was holding the joystick so hard that he had to concentrate to let go of it. The clock by his bed said 6:03 because it was broken. But it meant he'd have to get up in another hour or so. He sat with his quilt around him, watching the television until the alarm went off. There were some more pictures of missiles and bullets streaking over a city. They looked pretty much the same as the ones he'd seen last night, but were probably back by popular demand. He felt sick. Yolus could help, Johnny decided. He normally hung out with Wobbler and Big Mac on the bit of wall behind the school library. They weren't exactly a gang. If you take a big bag of crisps and shake them up, all the little bits end up in one corner. Yolus was called Yolus because he never said yo. He'd given up objecting to the name by now. At least it was better than Nearly Crucial, which was the last nickname, and MC Spanner, which was the one before that. Johnny was the official nickname generator. Yolus said he'd never said Crucial either. He pointed out that Johnny was white and never said,
You what? You what? You what? Or Arsenal! Arsenal!
And anyway, you shouldn't make jokes about racial stereotyping. Johnny didn't go into too much detail. He just talked about the dream and not about the messages on the screen. Yolus listened carefully. Yolus listened to everything carefully. It worried teachers the way he listened carefully to everything they said. They always suspected he was trying to catch them out. He said,
What you've got here is a projection of a psychological conflict. That's all. Want a cheese ring?
What's that?
It's just crunchy, cheesy flavoured.
I mean the other thing you said. Yolis passed the packet on to Big Mac.
Well, your mum and dad are splitting up, right? Well-known fact.
Could be. It's a bit of a trying time, said Johnny.
Okay. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Shouldn't think so, said Johnny.
And this definitely affects you, said Yolis.
I suppose so, said Johnny cautiously. I know I have to do a lot of my own cooking.
Right. So you project your, suppressed emotions onto a computer game. Happens all the time,
said Yolis, whose mother was a nurse and who wanted to be a doctor if he grew up.
You can't solve the real problems, so you turn them into problems you can solve. Like, if this was 30 years ago, you'd probably dream about fighting dragons or something. It's a projected fantasy.
Saving hundreds of intelligent newts doesn't sound very easy to solve, said Johnny.
Dunno, said Big Mac happily. Rat-a-tat-tat, blam! No more problem.
Big Mac wore large boots and camouflage trousers all the time. You could spot him a mile off by his camouflage trousers.
The thing is, said Yolis, it's not real. Real's real, but stuff on a screen isn't.
I've cracked Stellar Smashers, said Wobbler. You can have that if you want. Everyone says it's a lot better.
No, said Johnny. I think I'll stick with this one for a while. See if I can get to level 21.
If you get to level 21 and blow up the whole fleet, you get a special number on the screen. And if you write off to Gobi Software, you get a £5 token, said Wobbler. It was in Computer Weekly.
Johnny thought about the captain. A whole £5, he said. Gosh. It was games in the afternoon. Big Mac was the only one who played. He'd never been keen until they'd introduced hockey. You got a club to hit people, he said. Yolis didn't do sport because of intellectual incompatibility. Wobbler didn't do sport because the sportsmaster had asked him not to. Johnny didn't do sport because he had a permanent note, and no one cared much anyway. So he went home early and spent the afternoon reading the manual. He didn't touch the computer before tea. There was an extended news, which meant that Cobbers was postponed. There were the same pictures of missiles streaking across the city that he'd seen the night before, except that now there were more journalists in sand-coloured shirts with lots of pockets talking excitedly about them. He heard his mother downstairs complain about Cobbers, and, by the sound of the raised voices that started, trying times again. There was some history homework about Christopher Columbus. He looked him up in the encyclopedia and copied out 400 words, which usually worked. He drew a picture of Columbus as well and coloured it in. After a while, he realised that he was putting off switching the computer on. It came to something, he thought, when you did schoolwork rather than play games. It wouldn't hurt to have at least a game of Pac-Man or something. Trouble was, the ghosts would probably stay in the middle of the screen and refuse to come out and be eaten. He didn't think he could cope with that. He'd got enough to worry about as it was. On top of it all, his father came upstairs to be fatherly. This happened about once a fortnight. There didn't seem to be any way of stopping it. You had to put up with 20 minutes of being asked about how you were getting on at school, and had you really thought about what you wanted to be when you grew up. The thing to do was not encourage things, but as politely as possible. His father sat on the edge of the bed and looked around the room as though he'd never seen it before. After the normal questions about teachers Johnny hadn't had since the first year, his father stared at nothing much for a while, and then said,
"Things have been a bit tricky lately. I expect you've noticed."
"No?"
"It's been a bit tricky at work. Not a good time to start a new business."
"Yes."
"Everything all right?"
"Yes."
"Nothing you want to talk about?"
"No, I don't think so." His father looked around the room again. Then he said,
"Remember last year, when we all went down to Falmouth for the week?"
"Yes."
"You enjoyed that, didn't you?"
He'd got sunburnt and twisted his ankle on some rocks, and he had to get up at 8:30 every morning, even though it was supposed to be a holiday. And the only TV in the hotel was in front of some old woman who never let go of the remote control.
"Yes." "We ought to go again."
His father was staring at him. "Yes," said Johnny. "That would be nice." How are you getting on with Space Invaders?
Sorry?
Space Invaders, on the computer.
Johnny turned to look at the blank screen.
What are Space Invaders? He said.
Isn't that what they're called anymore? Space Invaders. You used to get them in pubs and things. Oh, before you were born. Rows of spiky, triangular, green aliens with six legs kept on coming down the screen, and we had to shoot them.
Johnny gave this some thought. What happened when you'd shot them all, then?
Oh, you got some more.
His father stood up.
I expect it's all more complicated now, though.
Yes.
Done your homework, have you?
Yes.
What was it?
History. Had to write about Christopher Columbus.
Hmm. You could put in that he didn't set out to discover America. He was really looking for Asia, and found America by accident.
Yes. It says that in the encyclopedia.
Glad to see you're using it.
Yes. It's very interesting.
Good. Right. Right then. Well, I'm going to have another look at those accounts.
Right.
If there's anything you want to talk about, you know.
All right.
Johnny waited until he heard the living room door shut again. He wondered if he ought to have asked where the instruction manual for the dishwasher was. He switched on the computer. After a while, the screen for Only You Can Save Mankind came on. He watched the introductory bit moodily, and then picked up the joystick. There weren't any aliens. For a little while, he thought he'd done something wrong. He started the game again. There were still no aliens. All there was the blackness of space, sprinkled with a few twinkling stars. He flew around until he was out of fuel. No Scree-Wee, no dots on the radar screen. No game. They'd gone. Chapter 3. Serial Killers. There was more news these days than normal. Half the time the TV was showing pictures of tanks and maps of deserts with green and red arrows all over them, while in the corner of the screen would be a photo of a journalist with a phone to his ear, talking in a crackly voice. It crackled in the background while Johnny phoned up Wobbler.
Yes?
Can I speak to to Stephen, please?
Mutter, clonk, bump, scuffle.
Yes? It's me, Wobbler.
Yes?
Have you had a look at Only You Can Save Mankind lately? No. Hey, listen, I've found a way to... Could you have a go with it right now, please?
Pause.
You all right? What? You sound a bit weird. Look, go and have a go with the game, will you?
It was an hour before Wobbler phoned back. Johnny waited on the stairs.
Could I speak? It's me. There's no aliens, right? Yes. Probably something built into the game. You could do that, you know, a kind of time bomb thing. Maybe it's programmed to make all the aliens vanish on a certain date.
What for?
Make things more interesting, I expect. Probably Gobi software will be putting adverts in the computer papers about it. You all right? Your voice sounds a bit squeaky.
No problem.
You coming down the mall tomorrow?
Yeah.
See you then. Ciao.
Johnny stared at the dead phone. Of course there were things like that on computers. There'd been something in the papers about it. A Friday the 13th virus or something. Something in the program kept an eye on the date, and when it was Friday the 13th, it was supposed to do something nasty to computers all over the country. There had been stories about evil computer hackers menacing society, and Wobbler had come to school in homemade dark glasses for a week. Johnny went back and watched the screen for a while. Stars occasionally went past. Wobbler had written an actual computer game like this once. It was called Journey to Alpha Centauri. It was a screen with some dots on it. Because, he said, it happened in real time, which no one had ever heard of until computers. He'd seen on TV that it took 3,000 years to get to Alpha Centauri. He had written it so that if anyone kept their computer on for 3,000 years, they'd be rewarded by a little dot appearing in the middle of the screen, and then a message saying, "Welcome to Alpha Centauri. Now go home." Johnny watched the screen for a bit longer. Once or twice he nudged the joystick to go on a different course. It didn't make much difference. Space looked the same from every direction.
"Hello? Anybody there?"
he whispered. He watched some television before he went to bed. There were some more missiles, and someone going on about some other missiles which were supposed to knock down the first type of missile. The fleet travelled in the shape of a giant cone hundreds of miles long. The captain looked back at it. There were scores of motherships, hundreds of fighters. More and more kept joining them as news of the surrender spread. The Chosen One ship flew a little way ahead of the fleet. It wasn't answering messages. But no one was shooting at them. There hadn't been a human ship visible for hours. Perhaps, the captain thought, it's really working. We're leaving them behind. Johnny woke up in the game. It was hard to sleep in the starship. The seat started out as the most comfortable thing in the whole world, but it was amazing how uncomfortable it became after a few hours. And the lavatory was a complicated arrangement of tubes and trapdoors, and it wasn't, he was beginning to notice, entirely smell-proof. That's what the computer games couldn't give you, the smell of space. It had its own kind of smell, like a machine's armpit. You didn't get dirty, because there was no dirt, but there was a sort of grimy cleanliness about everything. The radar went ping. After a while, he could see a dot ahead of him. It wasn't moving much, and it certainly wasn't firing. He left the fleet and went to investigate. It was a huge ship. Or at least it had been once. Quite a lot of it had been melted off. It drifted along, absolutely dead, tumbling very gently. It was green and vaguely triangular, except for six legs, or possibly arms. Three of them were broken stubs. It looked like a cross between a spider and an octopus, designed by a computer and made out of hundreds of cubes bolted together. As the giant hulk turned, he could see huge gashes in it with melted edges. There was a suggestion of flaws inside. He switched on the radio.
Captain?
Yes?
Can you see this thing here? What is it?
We find them sometimes. We think they belonged to an ancient race, now extinct. We don't know what they called themselves or where they came from. The ships are very crude.
The dead ship turned slowly. There was another long burn down the other side.
I think they were called space invaders, said Johnny.
The human name for them?
Yes.
I thought so.
Johnny was glad he couldn't see the captain's face. He thought, no one knows where they came from, or even what they called themselves, and now no one ever will. The radar went ping again. There was a human ship heading towards the fleet at high speed. This time he didn't hesitate. The point was, the Skreewee weren't very good at fighting. After the first few games, it was quite easy to beat them. They couldn't seem to get the hang of it. They didn't know how to be sneaky or when to dodge. It was the same with all of them, come to think of it. Johnny had played lots of games with words like space and battle and cosmic in the titles, and all the aliens were the sort you could beat after a few weeks playing. This player didn't stand a chance against a real human. You got six missiles. Johnny had two streaking away before the enemy was much larger than a dot. Then he just kept his finger on the fire button until there was nothing left to fire. A spreading cloud of wreckage, and that was it. It wasn't as if anyone would die, after all. Whoever had been in there would just have to start the game again. It felt real, but that was just the dream. Dreams always felt real. He turned his attention to the thing by the control chair. It had a nozzle which filled a paper cup with something like thin vegetable soup, and a slot which pushed out very large plastic bags containing very small things like sandwiches. The bags had to be big to get all the list of additives on. They contained absolutely everything necessary to keep a Star Warrior healthy. Not happy, but healthy. He'd taken one mouthful when something slammed into the ship. A red glare filled the cabin. Alarms started to blare. He looked up in time to see a ship curving away for another run. He hadn't even glanced at the radar. He'd been eating his tea. He spun the ship. The multivitamin sandwich flew around into the wiring somewhere. It was coming back to get him. He prodded furiously at the control panel. Hang on, What was the worst that could happen to him? He could wake up in bed. He took his time. He dodged. He weaved. Another missile hit the ship. As the attacker roared past, Johnny fired with everything. Another cloud of wreckage. No problem. But it must have fired a missile just before he got it. There was another red flash. The lights went out. The ship jumped. His head bounced off the seat back and banged onto the control panel. He opened his eyes. Right, and you wake up back in your bedroom. A light winked at him. There was something beeping. Bound to be the alarm clock. That's how dreams end. He lifted his head. The flashing light was oblong. He tried to focus. There were shapes there, but they weren't saying 6, 3, and 3 lines. They were spelling out air leak, and behind the insistent beeping was a terrible hissing sound. No, no, he thought. This doesn't happen. He pushed himself up. There were lots of red lights. He pressed some buttons hurriedly, but this had no effect at all, except to make some more lights go red. He didn't know much about the controls of a starship, other than fast, slow, left, right, and fire. But there were whole rows of flashing alarms, which suggested that a lot of things he didn't know about were going wrong. He stared at some red letters which said, Secondary Pumps Failure. He didn't know what the secondary pumps were either, but he wished, he really wished they hadn't failed. His head ached. He reached up, and there was real blood on his hand, and he knew that he was going to die. Really die. No, he thought. Please, I'm John Maxwell. Please, I'm 12. I'm not dying in a spaceship. The beeping got louder. He looked at the sign again. It was flashing 6, 3, and 3 lines. About time, he thought, as he passed out. And woke up. He was at the computer again. It wasn't switched on, and he was freezing cold. He had a headache, but a tentative feel said there was no blood. It was just a headache. He stared into the dark black screen and wondered what it felt like to be a scree-wee. It felt like that, except that you didn't wake up. It was always air leak or alert, 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 beeping on and off, and then perhaps the freezing cold of space, and then nothing. He had breakfast. You got a free alien in every pack of sugar-glazed Snappy Flakes. It was a new thing, or an old thing being tried again. The one that ended up in his bowl was orange and had 3 eyes and 4 arms, and it was holding a ray gun in each hand. His father hadn't got up. His mother was watching the little television in the kitchen, where a very large man disguised as an entire desert was pointing to a lot of red and blue arrows on a map. He went down to Neil Armstrong Mal. He took the plastic alien with him. That'd be the way to invade a planet. 1 alien in every box. Wait until they were in every cupboard in the country, send out the signal, and bazam! Serial killers. Maybe on some other planet somewhere, you got a free human in every packet of ammonia-coated snappy crystals. Hey, Zorks, collect the whole set! And there'd be all these little plastic people, holding guns, of course. You just had to walk down the street to see that, of course, everyone had a gun. He looked out of the bus window. That was it, really. No one would bother to put plastic aliens inside the plastic cereal if they were just, you know, doing everyday things. Holding the cosmic Zippo Ray hedge clippers, getting on the Megadeth bus, hanging out at the Star Thruster Mall. The trouble with all the aliens he'd seen was that they either wanted to eat you or play music at you until you became better people. You never got the sort that just wanted to do something ordinary, like borrow the lawnmower. Wobbler and Yolus and Big Mac were trying to hang out by the ornamental fountain, but really they were just hanging around. Yolus was wearing the same grey trousers he wore to school. You couldn't hang out in grey trousers. And Wobbler still wore his sunglasses, except they weren't real sunglasses, because he had to wear ordinary glasses anyway. They were those clip-on sunglasses for tourists. Also, they weren't the same size as the glasses underneath, and had rubbed red marks on his nose. And he wore an anorak. Wobbler was probably the only person in the universe who still wore an anorak. And Big Mac, in addition to his camouflage trousers and Terminator T-shirt with BlackBerry skins on the back in biro, had got hold of a belt made entirely of cartridge cases. He looked stupid.
"Yo, Duds," said Johnny. "We've been here ages," said Yolas.
"I went one stop past on the bus and had to walk back," said Johnny, "thinking about other things. What's happening?"
"Do you mean what's happening, or sort of, hey, my man, what's happening?" said Wobbler.
"What's happening?" said Johnny.
"I want to go into J&J Software," said Wobbler. "They might have got cosmic coffee mats in. It's got a review in Bazam, and they said it's got an unbreakable copy protection."
"Did they say it was any good?" said Big Mac.
"Who cares?
You'll get caught one day," said Yolas.
"Then you get given a job in Silicon Valley designing anti-piracy software," said Wobbler.
Behind his two thicknesses of glasses, his eyes lit up. Wobbler thought that California was where good people went when they died.
"No, you don't. You just get in trouble and you get sued," said Yolas. "And the police take all your computers away. There was something in the paper."
They wandered aimlessly towards the computer shop.
"I saw this film once, right? Where there were these computer games, and if you were really good, the aliens came and got you, and you had to fly a spaceship and fight a whole bad alien fleet," said Big Mac.
"Did you beat it?
I mean, in the film, the alien fleet got beaten."
Big Mac gave Johnny an odd look.
"Of course, sure. There wouldn't be any point otherwise, would there?"
"Only you can save mankind," said Johnny.
"What?" "It's the game," said Wobbler.
"But it always says something like that on the boxes you get games in," said Johnny. "Except if you get them from Wobbler," he added to himself, "when you just get a disc."
"Well, yeah, something like that. Why not?"
"I mean, they never say only you are going to be put inside £1 billion worth of machine with more switches than you've ever seen and be blown to bits by 1,000 skilled enemy pilots because you don't really know how to fly it."
They wandered past Mr. Zippy's ice cream extravaganza.
"Can't see that catching on," said Wobbler. "Can't see them ever selling a game called Get Shot to Pieces."
"You still having trouble at home?" said Yolas. "It's all gone quiet," said Johnny.
"That can be worse than shouting."
"Yes."
"It's not that bad when your mum and dad split up," said Wobbler, "although you get to see more museums than is good for you."
"Still found no aliens?" said Yolas.
Not in the game."
"Still dreaming about them?" said Wobbler.
"Sort of."
Someone handing out leaflets about big savings on double glazing gave one in desperation to Yolas. He took it gravely, thanked them, folded it in two, and put it in his pocket. Yolas always filed this sort of thing. You never knew when it might come in handy, he said. One day he might want to double glaze his surgery, and he'd be in a good position to compare offers.
"Anyone see the war on the box last night?" said Big Mac. "Way to go, eh?"
"Way to go where?" said Yolas.
"We're really kicking some butt."
"Some butt what?" said Wobbler.
"We'll give them the mother-in-law of all battles, eh?"
said Big Mac, still trying to stir some patriotism.
"Nah, it's not like real fighting," said Wobbler. "It's just TV fighting." "Wish I was in the army," said Big Mac wistfully. Blam!
He shot the double-glazing lady, who didn't notice. Big Mac had a habit of firing imaginary guns. Other people played air guitar, he shot air rifles.
"Couple more years," he said. "That's all." "You ought to write to Storming Norman," said Wobbler. "Ask him to keep the war going until you get there." "He's done pretty well for someone called Norman," said Yolas. "I mean, Norman. Not very Macko, is it? It's like Bruce or Rodney." "He had to be Norman," said Wobbler. "Otherwise he couldn't be Stormin'. You couldn't have Stormin' Bruce, come on."
J&J Software was always packed on a Saturday morning. There were always a couple of computers running games and always a cluster of people gathered round them. No one knew who J&J were, since the shop was run by Mr. Patel, who had eyes like a hawk. He always watched Wobbler very carefully, on the fairly accurate basis that Wobbler distributed more games than he did and didn't even charge anyone for them. The four of them split up. Big Mac wasn't much interested in games, and Yolas went down to look at the videos. Wobbler had found someone who knew even more complicated stuff about computers than he did himself. Johnny mooched along the racks of games.
I wonder if the Scree-Wee do this, he thought. Or people on Jupiter or somewhere. Go down to a shop and buy Shoot the Human games. And have films where there's a human running around the place terrorizing a spaceship. He became aware of a raised voice at the counter. You didn't often get girls in J&J software. Once, quite a long time ago, during a bit of time she'd set aside for parenting, Johnny's mother had tried playing a game. It had been quite a simple one. You had to shoot asteroids and flying saucers and things. It had been embarrassing. It had been amazing that the flying saucers had even bothered to shoot back. More likely they should have parked and all the aliens could have looked out of the windows and made rude noises. Women didn't have a clue. A girl was complaining to Mr. Patel about a game she'd bought. Everyone knew you couldn't do that, even if you'd opened the box and it was full of nothing but mouse droppings. Mr. Patel took the view that once the transparent wrapper had come off, even the Pope wouldn't be allowed to return a game. Not even if he got God to come in as well. This was because he'd met people like Wobbler before. The boys watched in fascinated horror. She kept tapping the offending box with a finger.
"And who wants to see nothing but stars?" she said. "I've seen stars before, actually. It says on the box that you fight dozens of different kinds of alien ships. There isn't even one."
Mr. Patel muttered something. Johnny wasn't close enough to hear, but the girl's voice had a kind of penetrating quality, like a corkscrew. When she spoke in italics, you could hear them.
"Oh, no, you can't say that, because how can I tell if it works without trying it? That comes under the Sale of Goods Act, 1983.
The awed watchers were astonished to see a slightly hunted look in Mr. Patel's eyes. Up until now, he'd never met anyone who could pronounce brackets. He muttered something else.
"Copy it? Why should I copy it? I've bought it. It says on the box you meet fascinating alien races. But all I got was one ship and some stupid message on the screen, and then it ran away. I don't call that fascinating alien races."
Message? Ran away? Johnny sidled closer. Mr. Patel muttered something else and then turned to one of the shelves. The shop watched in amazement. There was a new game in his hand. He was actually going to make an exchange. This was like Genghis Khan deciding not to attack a city, but stay at home and watch the football instead. Then he held up his hand, nodded at the girl, and stalked over to one of the shop's own computers, the ones with so many finger marks on the keys that you couldn't read them anymore. Everyone watched in silence as he loaded up the copy of the game that the girl had brought back. The music came on. The title scrolled up the screen, like the one in Star Wars. It was the usual stuff.
"The mighty Scree-Wee fleet have attacked the Federation," whatever that was, "and only you."
And then there was space. It was computer space, a sort of black with the occasional star rolling past.
"There ought to be 6 ships on the first mission," said someone behind Johnny.
Mr. Patel scowled at him. He pressed a key cautiously.
"You've just fired a torpedo at nothing, Mr. Patel," said Wobbler.
Finally, Mr. Patel gave up. He waved his hands in the air.
"How do you find the things to shoot?" he said.
"They find you," said someone. "You should be dead by now." "See," said the girl, "you get nothing but space. I left it on for hours, and there was just space."
"Maybe you're not persevering. You kids don't know the meaning of the word persevere," said Mr. Patel.
Wobbler looked over the shopkeeper's head to Johnny and raised his eyebrows.
"It's like persistently trying," said Johnny helpfully.
"Oh, right. Well, I persistently tried the other night, and I didn't find any either."
Mr. Patel carefully unwrapped the new copy of the game. The shop watched as he slotted the disc into the computer.
"Then let us see what the game looks like before Mr. Wobbler plays his little tricks," he said.
There was the title screen. There was the story, such as it was, and the instructions. And space.
"Soon we shall see," said Mr. Patel.
And then more space.
"This one was only delivered yesterday."
Lots more space. That was the thing about space. Mr. Patel picked up the box and looked at it carefully. But they'd all seen him take off the polythene. "They've gone," thought Johnny. "Even on the new games. They've all gone." People were laughing, but Wobbler and Yola's were staring at him.
Chapter 4. No One Really Dies.
I reckon, said Big Mac, I reckon.